been record breakers. Month after month after month, breaking records until July 24th was the hottest month that anybody ever heard of. Well, now we turn to the Earth. If we can't figure it out with our machines, forget the machines and embrace the fabulous unknown. Except we don't know. Can human beings do that? With all our pride, all our colonizing, all our control, well, we've got to. We have no choice. Turn to the Earth and say, I give up, I give over to you. The Earth culture people, the Deborah White Plumes, they tell us that there's a way that we can participate, that you're inviting us to work with you in some way, even though we caused it. Is that true? If it's not too late, give us a signal. We face you. We talk to you. We accept your message. The unknown that you give us is fabulous. If there's some known in the unknown that we are supposed to figure out, give that to us. We'll do the best we can. We are humbled. And now, we can be brave with you, with your gift of life. We know the extinction is life making more life possible. You're teaching life to survive. Oh, bless you. Life-alleluia. Somebody give me an Earth-alleluia today. Earth-alleluia.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Julia Dolan. She's the Minor White Senior Curator of Photography at the Portland Art Museum. And Julia's talking about Paul McCartney photographs, 1963 to 64, Eyes of the Storm, which is on now at the museum through January 19th. 2025. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus again, Julia.
My pleasure. Thanks for the invitation.
So I love this show because Paul McCartney took a bunch of pictures in 63 and 64 when they were just breaking, going from, you know, not obscurity in England, but, you know, breaking in England. And then they went to Paris and they went to America and they broke in America in 64. And Paul was, loved photography. He took a lot of shots backstage, green room, on the street, you know, hotels everywhere. And then I think he put them away for a long time and rediscovered them. And then they were turned into a big exhibition at the National Portrait Gallery in London. And now it's over here in Portland. So just tell us a little bit about, you know, how long were the pictures sort of hidden or lost?
The photographs were never quite lost, but it has been 60 years since they were created. Paul was aware of them. They were in the back of his mind, and a number of them were used, for instance, in a poster that accompanied what we call the White Album. And there was a general awareness of them, but he's someone who became part of the largest band in the world, potentially of all time. So he got a little busy, and photography and his archives were not always at the front of mind. So in 2020, when he was working on an exhibition with his in-house curator. He also has an archivist of his wife Linda's photography. She was a professional photographer. He brought it up to his staff and said, "You know, I've been thinking about these photographs. Are they easy to get to?" And they said, "Yes, absolutely." And pulled out the 35 millimeter negatives and the contact sheets, and it brought back a rush of really good memories and feelings for him. And so the National Portrait Gallery was contacted. They came up to have a look at the images. Again, at this point, they were only contact sheets, so very, very small prints and 35 millimeter negatives. And everyone decided that there was exhibition worthy work in those images. And that's how the exhibition came to be. It was first installed at the National Portrait Gallery in London last year and is now touring.
Mm-hmm. And how many pictures are there in Portland at this show?
We have 267 on the walls. We fit in as many as we could. Each location is a little bit different in terms of architecture and wall space. So of the approximately 281 photographs, we got almost all of them in. We have 267. And you can also see three videos that contextualize some things. And also there is some ephemera included in the exhibition. So you can mm-hmm. take a look at facsimiles of handwritten notes and handwritten lyrics, and then you can see some of the contact sheets as well.
Yeah, it's a great show because you just cram a lot in. You know, there's pictures every few inches.
It's a tight hang, as we like to say in business. Yeah.
And you've got like big vinyl versions or, you know, blow up versions stuck to the wall.
Yeah.
Kind of like murals. And then you paint some of the walls deep red. It's just a great walkthrough. You'll spend a long time there, put it that way. And like, even if you don't care about the Beatles, everyone has an opinion about pop culture and the way it moves and, you know, its power. So it's really interesting show.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Beatles are inescapable, whether you're more of a Rolling Stones fan or the Beatles have never sung to you personally. There's, at least in my opinion, there's no way of getting around them historically or culturally. And I don't think that's a bad thing at all. And it can bring us back to a time period and think about what was going on in that time beyond the Beatles. So for instance, Paul was very particular, as you mentioned, the paint colors. Those are his decisions. And the first room that you get into that features photographs of Liverpool and London, that deep, beautiful red reminds him of the theaters that they were playing in during that time period in the early 1960s in England, which had not really recovered yet from World War II at this point. So he brings us back into that situation, into that physical space that he was working and living in at the time, even through paint color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a very much an Oz journey from drab black and white Britain to colorful America, Miami and all that. But in the early days, I mean, Paul is shooting, if you've got the book, actually, this is an amazing book, and it has a lot of backstage pictures in Britain. There's one of George sitting on a chair. He's all in black with a black turtleneck. He's got his legs crossed. His arm is sort of folded under his chin. He's looking down at the floor away. It's like a kind of thinker pose.
Mm-hmm.
But the background is like old, you know, tablecloth, sort of floral tablecloth, and these kind of chairs, you know, the sort of theater metal chairs. And there's a big mirror behind George. And then you can see, I think it must be Paul's leg, half of Paul, where he's shooting the picture. What do you think Paul was up to in those quiet moments backstage?
There is a lot of hanging out time and waiting to go on stage and transferring from one place to another. In the Liverpool and London images, which are the earliest ones in the show, they're from late 1963, I interpret them as more intimate with a definite notation and indication of Paul experimenting with photography. So he's someone who knew about photography as a kid, was very interested in photography for a long time. By this point, there are photographers who are around them. They're making covers, shots for albums, and they're being photographed by the press. So they have photographers around them. All four of the Beatles have their own Pentax camera at this point.
Mm-hmm.
They're all making images, but Paul is actively working on, you know, thinking about composition, thinking about the people who are around him. And it's clear to me that he feels, I think, grounded in these spaces because he's from Liverpool. He knows London. They're used to being in these types of places within their own country. So it gives him, I think, some freedom to think about the people around him who are very much like family at this point, and photograph them in ways that are very personal, and that photographers who are not part of that world would not have been able to make photographs like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so really beautiful close-ups and then moments of boredom and being lost in thought. If you were to compare, say, the image of George that he makes that you're talking about now in the exhibition and from the book, to one that someone who is a press photographer would make, why would the press photographer or the editors of a magazine or a newspaper place that photograph in print? It doesn't necessarily show what the newspaper needs it to show, whereas Paul is showing us how they're living and that deep closeness that only they are experiencing at that time.
Yeah. And right opposite that, there's a great shot of John with his Coke bottle glasses on that I didn't even know he needed glasses. He had contacts in the 60s?
He did, which are like shards of glass that you put eyes all the time. So most of the time he wore Coke bottle glasses. So our later understanding of John Lennon wearing those round glasses that are so iconic, John Lennon in the early 1960s did not go on stage in his glasses. So very few people could get shots of John in his Coke bottle glasses at this time. Only people like Paul and Ringo and George could do such a thing.
Yeah, there's a triptych of Paul in a suit with a cigarette in his mouth. There's a kind of light shining on his hair coming from the side, the window, and he's all alone, and it's a reflection. So he's taking his own, you know, taking a mirror selfie. He looks kind of serious. So there's three different ones. They're composed differently. In one, his head is cut off. And in the other, side of his face is almost cut off. What was his fascination with reflections?
I think it's very normal for photographers, particularly when they're newer to the medium and they're thinking about composition, to play with mirrors and figure out how a mirror can change a composition. So you will see a lot of photographs in the exhibition with mirrors involved. And it's not to say that only amateur photographers use mirrors. Professional photographers use them all the time as well. They're a wonderful device to change the composition. And I really like that strip of photographs. I think that's an indication for us as well that he's thinking maybe not sequentially, but the choice of printing these three photographs together as a single image from the original negative strip is interesting to me because it gives us an idea of how photographers think and change their viewpoint, their focus, their composition in a linear way along the strip of 35 millimeter film. So we're seeing, you know, a before, a during, almost an after as well. It's a little bit more cinematic in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that he's showing to us that, you know, hey, I was thinking through photography and I was playing with composition here too. I didn't just make, you know, single great images one after the other. Mm-hmm. It is all about changing one's positionality within a scene. You know, at this point, he's 21, going on 22, maybe. He's very, very young. So he's also thinking about himself and who he is, not only in terms of his photography, but most certainly within terms of being a Beatle.
And of course, like if you grew up with a brownie, you know, you'd have to be very careful about taking a shot because you didn't want to waste film. But
Right.
in this case, he probably had like loads of film and he could do multiple shots just playing around experimenting.
Yes, absolutely. It was, you know, probably 36 exposures on each roll of film. And he shot about 1,000 images altogether, whether it was with the black and white film or with Kodachrome during this 3-month time period. So he was actively using film, and the photograph, the film was developed, and he was looking at the contact sheets by 1964. There's handwriting on the back of the contact sheets from that time indicating where he was and who was in different photographs. And he also was making marks on the front of the contact sheets, like X's and circles of the photographs that he really liked. So he was an active participant, not only shooting, but then considering the photographs that he was making during that time.
Yeah, so he had that editorial kind of flair. And there's also a little thing where they often shot them in a strip where each guy stood behind the other and put their head on the other guy's head, so they're in almost like a long vertical. And in the exhibition, they explain newspapers often only had a narrow column to cover them, and if they wanted a picture, it had to be a tall, skinny picture.
Yeah, absolutely. So you will see some photographs of Paul McCartney in the exhibition, and when you see those, that is typically a photograph made on Paul's film with his camera, but he was maybe going on stage and he handed off his camera to a roadie or his manager.
Oh, okay.
And there is an example in the exhibition of the four of them, their heads vertical in a row, because newsprint photographers, journalists would have to figure, they would have to give their editors different versions. Like, is this going to be a landscape type photograph that takes up two or three columns at above the fold, as they say? Or is it something that is going to take up a column that is vertical? It would have to fit within, and how do you fit four people into a single newspaper column? Well, sometimes their heads have to be one on top of the other. So it's a device.
I mean, in the book, if you get the book, page 148-49, there's the road manager just sitting there with a drink and I think a cigarette. It's kind of out of focus, a sort of suitcase record player in the background or speaker. And then the other page is John with shades on, playing an acoustic guitar. He's got a shirt on. And there's a bunch of flowers in the foreground. I must say, a lot of these pictures are totally out of focus.
They're soft. They're certainly soft focus. Yes. So, but you have to remember, this is 35 millimeter film that was probably at a slowish speed, maybe 400. Technologically, he's not using a flash in these images. And flash can give you a lot better focus in the moment that you're taking the image, but Paul's not using flash indoors in darkly lit places, often at night, and all these photographs were also made in the winter. So yeah, a lot of them are gonna be soft because of a very kind of narrow depth of field. Only a little bit of the image can be in focus because the camera just can't handle getting a lot in focus in low light with that type of film. And there's movement too, right? So John's playing guitar, so we might see his hand moving, his head moving, that kind of thing. What doesn't bother me about it is they feel more memory-like to me and more dreamlike. The softness, because it's not all the time, not everything is blurry or out of focus. It's selective moments that he really couldn't control. It doesn't bother me because it feels much more memory-like to me. And these photographs were made 60 years ago. So all of our memories, some, you know, are in focus while others are blurry.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Julia Dolan. She's the Minor White Senior Curator of Photography at the Portland Art Museum, and she is talking about Paul McCartney photographs 1963 to 64 Eyes of the Storm, and that's on through January 19th, 2025. When the Beatles landed in New York, I guess they came in early 64, February, to do the Ed Sullivan Show. So you got these great candids of them on the plane, like John's sleeping, O'Brien's just sitting there with his tie on, the flying pan out. And then you get these great street shots of just young girls in their winter coats screaming behind the barricades, wooden barricades, and cops everywhere. It's just very New York, lots of wintry trees, you know, midtown apartment buildings. The whole thing is called Eyes of the Storm, and it, you know, it's about being in this whirlwind of fame. These pictures in New York, they really bring back the kind of Beatlemania.
They sure do. And there's one in particular of one that Paul photographed out of what I believe is the back of the car. So in the bottom of the frame, you can see what is most likely the back seat or the trunk. It's out of focus. What is really in focus is these mobs of people running after them down the street in Manhattan. And it's images like that that influenced A Hard Day's Night, which is the film that they made when they got back from their first trip to the US after they left Miami. They almost immediately started filming A Hard Day's Night. And it's a viewpoint that we often don't see, you know, in the newspapers of that time. We certainly see screaming people and police trying to hold folks back from the barricades. And we certainly get a sense of the utter mayhem, but those photographers weren't the spectacle, whereas Paul is the spectacle. So he is photographing what is coming at him and all of the energy that is being driven directly to him and the other Beatles. There are only four people who could have made photographs like that, and Paul is one of them.
He was shooting out the front of the car too. There's one of the Hotel Mayflower, and it has this Coke sign with a big thermometer, which is a dial thermometer with the weather forecast on it. It says tomorrow's weather, rain and cloudy. And, you know, it's just that I've feel exactly that way when I first landed in New York when I was 19, just looking at the huge buildings and the signs everywhere. It's just kind of overwhelming. So a lot of it is this personal kind of tourism, you know, for a young man.
Absolutely. And I appreciate that you are indicating that this photograph triggered memories for you as well, because you're having a similar experience, except you are not in the Beatles at the time when you first came to the US, but you still have those feelings. And that's what I love about the photographs that Paul made, is that we can connect our own experiences of being new somewhere or being in an unfamiliar situation or in the buzz of a city. So yes, absolutely. There's some wonderful street photography energy in these images that was very palpable during this time in American photography. And something else to note in the images, particularly in the United States, is we are a car country and a car culture. And the Beatles were confined for the most part to automobiles. They couldn't get on the subway. They couldn't walk down the street for the most part at this point. So the car becomes part of their world, and Paul incorporates parts of the car within his compositions. And that is quite normal and understood as an artistic photographic language by this point. There are a number of photographers working in the United States in this manner already. So his photographs fit very well into the time that they were made.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. There are some great shots of, I think they're either nurses or waitresses. They're in their white gear with little white caps looking out of a window. You know, they're just catching the spectacle as it goes by, and he's capturing them. And then there's the one where he focuses on the gun on the hip of a police officer, I think is a motorbike cop. And,
yes,
you know, I think we can all relate to that first time. You see, go to a culture that has armed police.
Right. Well, I'm American, so it's a culture that I grew up in. But it is certainly, for Paul, it was unique in his experience coming to the United States for the first time and seeing police carrying weapons out in the open. That was not something that he and his colleagues were used to at all. And it's a real reminder of gun culture in the United States and the kind of feeling that folks who are not from here may experience. And what I am so impressed by in the image that Paul made is that he photographed the motorcycle cop with his head cut off. It's really from the shoulders down to his thighs. So that emphasizes the weapon on his hip. It emphasizes the extra bullets that he has. It also emphasizes the stripe down his pant leg, which is a real signal, I think, to many, if not most of us, or of either military or police. It's a type of authority. But because he has purposely not included the head of this officer, this image becomes symbolic of a type rather than an individual. So this is probably Paul's way of saying, oh, in the United States, this is how police are. It's not about an individual police person. It's about American policing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a sophisticated choice to make very quickly, which reminds me that Paul does not crop the photographs that you see in this exhibition. He learned a lot from his late wife, Linda, about photography, and she believed in showing all four corners of the frame as you made the image on the negative in the camera. Mm-hmm. So he did not crop out the officer's face later. Mm-hmm. He did that in camera.
And my favorite picture, so they get to Miami and it's like warm. Apparently the locals thought it was cold, but they're all swimming in the sea. It's like 70. And there's a great one of George in his shade, sort of wraparound shade, staring at the camera. And he's got a drink. He's accepting a drink from a girl in a bikini. Again, she's cropped. And it's a very 60s bikini, yellow, quite covers a lot of body. He's got a cigarette and he's accepting a cocktail. And it's like, boy band makes it. It's like their dream, I think. And it's just a beautifully framed shot with the palm trees and the cool furniture and the red flowers. It's just a beauty.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. It's the epitome of cool, right? Mm-hmm. It's they have arrived, they have landed. And I think what's so wonderful about Paul's decision to almost immediately switch to Kodachrome when he arrived in Miami is that that's what a photographer would do. A photographer would realize that the environment is completely different and that black and white, for the most part, is not going to capture what he wants to capture. So he switches over to Kodachrome, which at that point was still, for the most part, being used for your family vacation slides and for advertising. So the color is beautifully saturated. And that's exactly what he needed for a photograph like this one. And this is an image of where they're finally relaxing after this whirlwind in a house that was a friend of somebody they knew, because they couldn't go to the beach. They tried, but it didn't work very well because there were too many folks waiting for them by the beach, in the water even. And so the person who is handing over the drink is the daughter of the homeowner. So can you imagine? I believe she was 16 at the time that, the Beatles are coming as kind of a surprise to visit your house, because they have to get away from the photographers and the crowds. And then you get to give them a cocktail. What an amazing experience. I think what's so wonderful about the exhibition is that everyone can connect to a different photograph that's meaningful to them. I have photographs that mean something to me. My approach may be different because I look at photographs for a living, but in reality, we all look at photographs all our lives, every single day, and we make photographs too. And I think that's what I love so much about this show, is that we see a range of photographs, and there are quite a few of them that are absolute bangers and that are just so beautifully composed and so special and rank right up there in the larger history of photography. And then there are more that are also quieter and thoughtful in a different way. And whenever I see those, I think about how wonderful it is that all of us can experiment with photography for the most part now, because we have these little devices in our pockets that sometimes make phone calls, but for the most part, they make photographs now. And I absolutely love that we can all make really good photographs every once in a while that hold the world in them and will remind us of who we once were and what we once experienced, you know, 40, 50, 60 years later.
It's a great exhibition. I hope people will go see it. My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Julia Dolan. She is the Minor White Senior Curator of Photography at the Portland Art Museum. Julia was talking about Paul McCartney photographs 1963 to 64, Eyes of the Storm, which is on now through January 19th, 2025. Thank you very much for doing Art Focus once again, Julia.
Thanks so much, Joseph.
Love me do.
Estás escuchando KBOO Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 22 de octubre del 2024.